Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician and CVPM Angel Martin.
Hello, everyone.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 99 is once again being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So we are once again broadcasting from beautiful Lawrenceville, Georgia. Weather Rock, I just checked it a minute ago, was dry and warm.
That means it's nice and sunny outside.
Sunny, no clouds, no rain, warm. I heard coming in to work this morning that we may pass the all-time high with the temperature today. And that temperature is 78 degrees.
78 degrees in February?
Yeah.
Like you're saying the all-time, the record high for the day.
That we may break today. And it was 1980 or 1986. I don't remember.
Well, when I came in to work late this afternoon, it was 72 degrees outside in my car.
Yeah.
And when I got out, it was super beautiful. It actually makes me feel like I'm going to go to the park later.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Checking my phone right now, it's showing 77 degrees.
Oh, gosh.
In Lawrenceville, Georgia. So, welcome, everyone.
Do you think that means we're going to have a really hard summer? Like a really hot summer?
I don't know. What did whatever the groundhog pucks to...
The one in Georgia, Saint... Oh, God. I don't remember his name.
I don't remember either one of them. But anyway, what was the prediction?
Beauregard. Anyways.
General Beauregard, yeah.
So he said that we are going to have an early spring, and the guy up in...
Puxta something, Phil.
Yes, he said that we're going to have a late spring.
Okay.
So as we talked about a couple podcasts ago, that things are not always the same regionally.
Right.
So hopefully we will have an early spring, but...
Historically in Georgia, we can get hammered in March. We can think we're out of winter,
yeah.
And all of a sudden,
yes.
Yeah, we can have some storms. So
yes,
fingers
yes.
crossed that doesn't happen this year. So word of the week, I feel like we've probably had this or these before. I just jotted these down before we started because we've had a few cases of late.
So you're going to say words of the
words
week.
Words of the week.
Okay.
I got to come in and cut a case today that was an enterotomy.
We have definitely had this.
And then we've been doing several gastrotomies.
We have had this word.
I'm
pretty sure last time we had them, do you remember when Graham was here? Anastomosis, right?
Anastomosis,
we started talking about all of that. So.
Yeah, okay. Well, so I guess they're not new words, but...
But they're relevant, so go ahead and educate us.
Gastro, gastric, gastrotomy, so that's referring, the gas, G-A-S-T-R, is referring to the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And the otomy, what does that mean? What does the suffix of otomy mean?
Incision into?
Opening. Opening up, yeah. So opening up the stomach, gastrotomy, enterotomy, which is what we did today for a linear foreign body on a cat, opening up the small intestine to remove that. So let's touch real quick on foreign body.
Okay.
Have we talked about that before?
I don't recall.
So we pretty much would use that almost every day in clinical practice.
The term
but
foreign body.
If you are not a clinician, you may not understand what a foreign body is. So what is your definition of a foreign body?
A foreign body is essentially an object somewhere in the being that is not supposed to be there.
In the pet in this case.
So, but in a human as well, right? So like you get a splinter.
Yeah.
And that's essentially considered a foreign body.
I think that's spot on. That's exactly what I was wanting to talk about, that it's foreign because it's not supposed to be in the body.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a foreigner.
Oh,
I was
going
to say it's not supposed to be in a foreign country. They can be, but they're not native to that country.
But the reason they're considered foreigners is because they're not native to that country. It's not
right.
Whether they're supposed to be there or not, but it's the same thing, right? Right. Like wood is not supposed to enter or penetrate the skin, but the minute it does, now it's a foreign object inside the body. So,
right.
Yeah, I think we're saying the same things here.
Yeah, foreign object, but we tend to say foreign body. And you're right. You get something, you or a pet gets something under the skin or in the lung, like a grasson. It's gonna evoke a pretty nasty response.
Like a what? What did you say? A grasson?
Grasson.
I don't know what a grasson is.
Are you serious?
I'm very serious.
Okay. We don't really tend to see that problem here, but a lot of hunting dogs, for instance, that are out in some of these high grasses, an awn is like almost like an arrowhead.
Okay. I've seen them. I did not know that's what it's called, a grasson. I would essentially just call it like a picker. Okay. Even though it's not a picker.
It's not a picker. Are you talking about like a sticker?
Okay, so yes, but a sticker and a picker and a grasson in my world are all the same thing.
They're all different. So growing up in Texas, we would have sticker wars.
So those are like the little bitty tiny balls that have like the little
super
like
sharp
Velcro-y type.
They look kind of like coronavirus, right? The depiction.
But you're talking, they're bigger?
But they're little bitty. No,
okay,
they're
the size of
an eraser.
Okay.
But there's probably, so they're on the end of a stem of grass.
Mm-hmm.
So this type of grass is kind of a weed, you know, it's not very helpful. It grows where it shouldn't grow. And they're wide blade, the grass is wide bladed, very close to the ground, very much spider net like.
Sure.
Coming out, cargo net maybe.
Spider
to the
nets.
Ground. And then the stems come up and they have these stickers. And probably 10, 15, 20 all around. And so what we would do when we had nothing else to do is we would be outside playing, cutting up, and all of a sudden somebody would find these stickers, and you would be very careful, right, not to grab the sticker, the head part. You would go break it off at the bottom of the stem, and so it almost is like a bottle rocket at this point. Do you know what a bottle rocket is?
I do know what a bottle rocket is.
On the wooden stem, right? So
yep.
the wooden stem is the stem of the leaf, and then the bottle rocket itself is the sticker.
Gotcha.
But you don't shoot them linearly at something or someone. You actually throw them at each other.
Mm.
And we never wore shorts growing up. We always wore long pants. And so you would be in one of these sticker war fights, whatever you're going to call it, and you'd look down and you'd have like 18 of these stickers all over you. And it would be very difficult to get them off. If they hit you on the shirt, then your shirt's thinner than your blue jeans. And so anyway, that was one of the many, I was going to say fun games. I don't know that I would, looking back, call it fun.
So I'm looking up pictures of this like Texas sticker plant. I don't know if you can
sticker
see
weed.
This. But that's definitely not what I was talking about. What I was talking about is like much smaller, and you typically find it in brush, and they're tee tiny. They're like a bead almost, but they stick onto your socks and your pants when you're walking through a brush.
Okay, those are, the little bitty ones that aren't nearly as
these look like they freaking hurt.
Oh yeah, they do. Yes, that's what I'm saying. You know,
I guess what I'm talking about is more like a burr, not a sticker.
I know what you mean.
But yeah, still, like, to me, a sticker, a burr, it all is relative and means the
same
thing.
They're all very similar. It just
what was the first thing you called it? A grass arrow?
On.
Grass on.
So, yeah. Okay. We kind of went way out in left field here. But we were talking about grass ons, foreign body reaction in lungs causing like a pyothorax.
Yes. So, humans can get, inhalations or mm-hmm. inhaled foreign bodies, right? So, anytime you're essentially eating something and you go to choke, it is now a foreign body or foreign object in your trachea, your windpipe. So same thing happens to dogs. Like you'll hear them.
So again, it's mainly hunting dogs, but it doesn't have to be a hunting dog, but they have more exposure right, to this particular type of foreign body. And so, they could be running, whether they're, bird hunting dogs or just, whatever they do. That's not really my cup of tea, but out in amongst the grasses and they inhale one or two of these ons, they go down through the upper respiratory tract, penetrate into the lower respiratory tract or lungs and set up the beginning of a nasty granuloma and infection usually.
So, but going back to your enterotomy, gastrotomy topics, what were some of the things that you recently retrieved, foreign objects that you retrieved from either the intestines, the enterotomy, or the stomach with the gastrotomy?
Right. So, So now we're talking the foreign bodies in the GI tract. This morning was a piece of string with some kind of hard plastic covering on one end and a smaller piece of that on the other. And this was what a cat ate. This was a cat. And so cats like to play with string. Be very careful at home if you have cats with yarn and anything really that is that linear string-like type of material, because they love to play with it, and for some reason they love to start eating it.
So often we see this at Christmas with tinsel, and we see it at Easter with the grass out of the Easter baskets.
Weather stripping from windows and doors.
Oh,
They
wow.
I've removed several sections of that. Coins recently.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. We just did a scoping. We just so.
It was like a Kong toy, like a rubber, round rubber toy that you retrieve from the stomach, but using a gastroscope, not an
Yes, that was
incision
the last
into.
one. It was a piece of hard rubber that we, I forget what the radiologist thought it was. They thought it was a squeaker from a toy, but we got in there and it was hard rubber. And so instead of having to open the animal up through its abdominal cavity and then do the gastrotomy, we were able to use our scope, our gastroscope or endoscope, and go down into the stomach and grab that
Retrieve it.
rascal and pull it out. And
So the
so
recovery for that for the dog is essentially
home in 2 hours.
okay, versus a
First.
gastrotomy is a pretty serious open abdomen, at least, 45-minute long procedure.
When we do it all the time, right? When we need to, but if we can retrieve using a scope, much better. Comparable but different than doing some of these laparoscopic procedures. We don't have to open up the abdomen from sternum to pelvis. We can just go in with a couple of ports. So, yeah, always trying to look to do things the safest, quickest way, and ultimately what's best for the pet is always going to be best for the owner.
So all this relating back to our
Healthy
story
pet, health.
at University of Florida.
Yeah, so I did, but healthy pet, happy life, right? That's so again, that's kind of our new tagline that we continue to talk about. But yeah, going so you led off, so go ahead and explain the alligator.
Well, so apparently at the University of Florida, there is a crocodile, not an alligator.
Oh.
Differences are
Here we go.
not of my forethoughts, I guess. I would have to look it up truly to see the differences. But this is for a crocodile who actually ate a shoe and had a gastrotomy performed at the University of Florida. So reading this article, it actually says that they tried to obtain this in a couple of different ways before they went in intercostal. So do you want to tell us what an intercostal approach is?
Between the ribs.
So they, it apparently looks like they tried to go in and somewhat squeeze the intestines to kind of get the foreign body back into the stomach and then up the esophagus so someone could reach in
With their hand or
with their
what?
hand. That's the way
Wow.
it reads,
Hope they
which
had a very
seems
strong mouth gag in
super
the
scary, right?
crocodile's mouth.
So they could go in, and that was unsuccessful. So then they took this intercostal approach and was able to retrieve it. So I thought it was super interesting. They mentioned that, so typically we do a midline incision, or you guys would do, you as veterinarians would do a midline incision in a dog or a cat, right? Cutting right down the middle of the abdomen. So in this crocodile, they really felt like they couldn't do a ventral midline incision because he slithers on his belly.
Okay, that makes sense.
And so,
Would open it up and dehisce the
dehiscence and then
decision.
infections, right? Because they oftentimes are laying in mud or water, that kind of thing. So they ended up going through the side, through the.
Paracostal, they did go through the intercostal muscles, or they went paralumbar.
It says intercostal approach. So, and
Interesting.
then got them direct access, and then they made a small incision into the stomach, and they were able to remove this sneaker.
So their anatomy must be a little bit different than dogs and cats, because if you go between the ribs at any point on a dog or cat, you're going to be in the thorax, the chest cavity. I guess back, around 12th and 13th ribs, you have a very small amount of thoracic space before you go through the diaphragm into the abdomen. So I'm wondering, you know, if they have, like, how many ribs they have.
Yeah, I don't know. I have definitely do not know the anatomy of an alligator.
The trunk of their body.
Or a crocodile.
Yeah. But it makes sense because, you know, over the past couple of years, we've had several pets that we've taken sizable tumors off of their chest on the very ventral or underside. And when a dog, say, lays down, usually it's the chest that hits the ground, the stomach. Some stomachs are bigger than others, just as in people, right?
But abdomen.
Typically the abdominal yeah. cavity, we do surgery all the time there, and it's not being traumatized by them laying down.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense. So what I found interesting, first of all, this was a crocodile in a zoological park.
Yes.
And so the shoe apparently came from somebody ziplining at the park, and it fell into the habitat.
Oh my gosh.
And really the way that whoever they is, knew that the crocodile had eaten a shoe is that it was evidently seen eating the shoe, and then the crocodile regurgitated or vomited up the shoe, and then it ate the shoe again.
Oh my gosh.
So I just thought that was hilarious.
That is pretty funny, but
and so dogs do that. Cats,
I don't know.
Not so much, but dogs will throw stuff up and eat it right back again.
I've
whether
never
it's a foreign
seen a
body.
Cat eat their own vomit.
No.
In fact, like I got so it's talking about cat vomit. I was so furious this morning. I woke up to two piles of cat vomit on our hardwood floor downstairs, and I then look over and there's a whole can of dog food on the ground. So Lance fed our dogs last night. My one dog is on a kidney diet, so he eats a kidney-specific soft food. So he left the can out onto the counter last night, which is mistake number one.
Mm-hmm.
But then the cat jumped onto the counter, which if I had seen her, I would have really gotten onto her. But then she knocked the dog food off onto the floor. It spilled all over the floor, leaked everywhere. She decided to eat it all up and then go puke it all over the house.
Wow.
I was so upset. But to your point, I don't think she was going to go back and re-eat the vomit. Now, my dog Tovin would absolutely puke it up and then go re-eat it.
Over and over again, right?
Yes.
So I was just reading a little more about the crocodile story and... Yeah, so they approached the stomach. They used CT and ultrasound to locate the foreign body, which was the shoe, and they determined that's where they would go in and approach it. They made, I'm not sure how big of an incision, but went in and got the stomach from the abdominal cavity and pulled it to the body wall.
Yes.
Versus opening up and getting both hands inside this crocodile. So,
yeah.
Anyway, very cool stuff. We don't do a lot of exotics here. And I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that, too. I was actually thinking when we were talking about this, because they talk a little bit about, like, suturing up the skin and having to put mattress sutures in so it relieves some tension and that kind of thing. Could you imagine, like, the feeling of your suture needle going through
crocodile
skin?
That's got to be tough.
That's got to be so tough.
Yeah.
Just if anyone ever thinks about it, right? So like think about sewing, right? If you were to take your sewing needle and sew up a banana, that's essentially what most of our dog and cat skin feels like. Just a crocodile
the
skin.
Crocodile,
gosh.
Alligator, I mean, boots are made out of the skin.
Yeah.
You know, eel, some of these are really hard skin. So yeah, I would imagine you've got to definitely use a reverse cutting needle, not a taper needle to get through there.
I would think, yes, so. A taper will probably not work.
I'm sure by now everybody who is not in a cave has heard about Lady Gaga's dogs getting kidnapped and the dog walker being shot. And then I think we learned yesterday that the two dogs that were previously dognapped had been returned to the LAPD by some lady who found them tied up to a
post or a pole,
or
yeah,
something pole.
So I think the story is super interesting. So first of all, Lady Gaga's not in the United States right now. She's in Rome.
Yeah.
And so this person who is unnamed is her dog walker and gets shot. I read in different articles one time or four times. I'm pretty sure it's just once. The dogs are then stolen, and
one
then
dog runs away,
tied up in an alley. So, like, there's so much here. Like, were they after the dogs? The dogs are getting all of the attention right now, and I can't help but to think that maybe there's something that the dog walker was into. Like, I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see.
Do you shoot the dog walker because, like, he's, have a rivalry
with
him?
They pull up and whatever they said, you know, basically you give us the dog and he says no, and however that happened, and then he gets shot. They grab two of the dogs, one dog runs away, and then, basically 24 hours later, the two dogs are found tied up somewhere.
After $500,000 reward is posted.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. Yeah. And the lady who returned the dogs, they're not releasing her information or where the dogs were actually found.
Right. Well, it's still open investigation,
right? For safety reasons.
Because
I think they're super concerned.
There's a lot to dig into.
Yeah.
Here.
So I'm super happy for the dogs that they're back. I'm super happy that the dogs were unharmed. I think there's a lot more to the story that we'll probably never really know. But one thing that I found super interesting, right? And maybe it's just the way that I think, but I feel like, again, all the dogs are getting all the attention. I had to really read articles to find out if this person was dead or alive.
Yeah, supposedly he's recovering, but you're right. That was not at the top. It wasn't that he was shot, but is currently recovering. It was he was shot and the dogs were taken.
Yeah, and then it was all about the dogs. Oh, Lady Gaga's dogs, and Lady Gaga's dad is involved and thinks that, you know, this person should be prosecuted and all these other things. But, like, literally, I had to read all the way to the bottom of the article to find out that the dog walker, who's unnamed, was shot. And it has been mentioned that these are non-life-threatening injuries.
It was outside his house as well, the story reads, because his Ring doorbell camera
caught
some of this on video. Mm-hmm. And so her dog walker has the dogs at his house, not at her house. So he's not. Anyway, it's weird.
It's a super weird story.
It's weird. And I feel like when I was reading this initially, I saw a picture of her dogs dressed up for like a Christmas photo. And I think there were 5 Frenchies.
I think she only has 3.
Well, maybe she does at this point. Maybe these were somebody else's, but I definitely saw them all dressed up with Santa Claus.
How funny.
And there was more than 3. So anyway, it'll be interesting. Yeah, what ultimately happens? What's the real story? And if the lady who turned the dogs in to the police department, I'm going to say, was completely uninvolved, will she get $500,000 reward? I don't think she's going to get it tomorrow. I think there's going to be a little bit of investigation.
So I would think there's going to be a little of investigation as well. And the story that I read said that the lady who recovered the dogs is not sure she's going to take the reward. I'm like,
wow.
I would take it if they're giving it.
I would take it. And if you don't want it, then give it to somebody else, right?
But yeah, maybe I'm totally facetious about it. But like, why would she not take it?
I agree. I think maybe the last story I had was through the GVMA newsletter this week. I saw a story that House Bill 609 has been introduced by Representative Gullett in Georgia. And basically, this bill would prohibit the outdoor sale of pets.
Yeah, so I read through this bill, and I am by no means litigious enough to understand truly about what they're talking about, but I can only hope that if this gets passed, it's just a step in the right direction.
Right.
Because this essentially, in my opinion, doesn't really change a whole lot.
I agree. It's gonna keep like the flea markets from selling pets, which is a problem in Georgia.
A huge problem.
North Georgia in particular.
Mm-hmm.
We see disasters coming from a lot of pet sources, I guess. North Georgia flea markets, but also the pet stores right down the road.
Stores right now are really bad. It's so sad. Some of the cases that we're seeing, some of the diseases that we're seeing in young animals that mm-hmm. really, like, you shouldn't see in pets this young.
But how many clients have you heard tell the story of how they obtained their pet and lo and behold, they got them from somebody at Walmart parking lot out of the back of their trunk or the back of their truck. I've heard on 2 hands. Yeah. I mean, it's something that's common.
They find a pet, you know, that's listed for sale, and then they go and they meet someone. Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I think what they're trying to do with the bill is have tighter regulation, which we talked a few podcasts ago. You know, we had some thoughts on everybody does need to be licensed. If your pet is not neutered, you know, then you need to have a higher licensing fee, and then really pretty steep fees on pet stores and people that sell pets. So yes, we'll see what happens.
I guess the big call to action here is that the AVMA or the GVMA is asking that if you have an input, if you feel like this is good, bad, and different, contact Susan Blevins immediately at susan@gvma.net so that the changes that people want to see are actually being addressed. Like I said, sure. I think that this is a step in the right direction, but does it really change a lot of things for these pets? Not right. Really.
What are the negatives? What are the pros? Definitely the pros outweigh the cons, but it does not fix the problem, but maybe it's a step in the right direction.
So I have one more story. Do you remember when we talked about different species, and we talked about a mustelid and like ferrets and prairie dogs and that kind of thing? Do you remember talking about the black-footed ferret? And you were like, oh, a black-footed ferret? Anyways, the black-footed ferret is on the endangered species list.
Okay.
The black-footed ferret is now the first endangered species to be cloned.
Cloned as in DNA clone.
As like in, they've been doing. So there was a ferret that had died almost 30 years ago in the 80s. Was frozen, preserved, however you want to say it. And then they cloned that exact one, or that genetically, that animal. And I think it was born December 10th. So it's now 3 months old or so.
Okay.
As far as I know, it's doing okay. But how interesting, right? Yeah. Like, we've talked about clones before.
Yes, large animals have been cloned. Pets have been cloned. I know at A&M in the early to mid 90s, they were starting to do some clones, and people with a lot of money were some of the first clients to have their pets cloned. And lo and behold, when they thought they were going to get an exact match, they never got the same exact look or personality of the pet. And so in this black-footed ferret, I think that's not what we're going for, right? We're just trying to bring them back from
the endangered species list. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Do you know what the percentage is, or what the number is, to go on that endangered species list?
I don't. There's different levels. Less in the wild. Yeah.
I know we talked about it, but that's kind of a, I would bet that Dr. Reese will have us a little report typed up by 2 p.m. on Monday that tells us what it does take to become an endangered species. And we will, once we get that from her, we will push it out in some form or fashion to let everybody know.
So I have one other question/story. So you have mentioned before that you grew up on a sheep farm in Texas, right?
Yep.
So was wool part of is it wool?
Yep.
Was that part of like the reason you had sheep?
It was not the major reason. We raised a lot of club lambs for livestock shows. Wool was kind of a secondary, right? So you can, it's like a cow, pigs, the same thing. You know, there's not just one reason. So with sheep, you can raise them for the wool, which is what is typically done, in my opinion, in Australia and the large sheep farms.
So interesting that you say that. Let's keep talking.
And they can be for meat. And so you can either raise them on your farm or put them in a feedlot situation to where you are growing up the sheep for a meat source.
Okay.
And what I said in our case, they weren't pets, I guess would be the other thing, but we were raising club lambs or show lambs for the junior livestock shows.
So essentially the betterment of the breed or the
species? You could talk about livestock shows for a long time and whether they're correct or not and what they mean and the whole purpose, but it is trying to set the breed standard, if you will, and judges are going to judge, you know, these exhibitors who bring their animals. It depends on the judge and it depends on current trends, you know, what I don't know. It's complicated.
Okay, so the reason I started asking this is because two things, right? So there's a story about a feral sheep in Australia who was found and had 78 pounds of fleece removed from it. So my point in asking you, like, if you guys sheared these sheep and you got wool off of them or fleece, you know, what's normal? How much should you get, you know, in regular season?
So typically we would shear the rams, the breeding stock males, or the ewes, breeding stock females, typically once a year.
Okay.
And it would be in the warmer months, right? So you could start as early as spring, you know, as late as summer or fall. I don't know. So I'm looking, what is that? 4 inches maybe? 4 or 5 inches of wool from the skin to the tip of it.
Okay.
And then you shave the entire animal, and it depends on how big they are. It does depend somewhat on their breed, as far as the quality of wool. So if you were to shear an entire, say, 180-pound, let's say, fine wool ewe, and you were able to keep all the wool together in one, you know, sheet of wool, which some of those really good sheep shearers can do, it would be this big. I'm making a circle with my arms and touching my fingertips.
But do you know the weight? I guess I can look it up.
All right. So, little known fact, one of my early childhood jobs is I would be in the wool, hard to say when you're from Texas, the wool sack, which a wool sack was about 6 feet tall and about 4 feet, 3 to 4 feet in diameter, and you had to have a stand with a ladder on it to get in this thing. And so you would put this fleece in there, and probably it would weigh 15 pounds at most. And then you would just pack all the wool into these big old bags. And I feel like the bags, they would take two people to carry and load into the trailer when you're taking it to the wool market. And they probably weighed maybe, I don't know, 200 pounds.
Okay, so while you're...
So this is a lot. This is a lot talking, of wool
yeah,
on
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
On
while
this.
You're talking about that, so I looked it up on Google. I said, you know, the typical weight of wool removed from a sheep, and it says that sheep can produce anywhere between 2 and 30 pounds of wool each year. To put that into perspective, 1 pound of wool can make 10 miles of yarn. And so it says in the United States, the average weight of fleece taken off a sheep is about 7 pounds.
Okay.
But varies from state to state. I would imagine temperature and maybe species,
again,
breed, all of that kind
yeah,
of thing
yeah,
has
sure.
to do with it. But this sheep, and
does
I'm
have a picture
pretty
of the...
sure his name is Barack. It did. It's currently on an ad. I'll show you. But they removed 35 kilograms or 78 pounds of fleece from this feral sheep.
That is a lot. That is, yeah. I mean, I've seen pictures of sheep that have not been shorn for, you know, 5 years or so. And boy, it's a mess. And I would bet that's what happened here.
Yeah. So it's apparently was affecting the health of this sheep. And again, it was feral, right? So feral meaning essentially non-domesticated, doesn't live
right
with
on
something.
Its own,
it's a wild animal, essentially. But it was ailing the sheep, and it was causing it, you know, some serious problems. So apparently
super
in Australia,
heavy for it to carry around.
Yeah,
and then, yeah,
they trapped
and
it, shaved it down, and I'm pretty sure
released.
Let it go into like a rescue, like a sheep rescue.
Okay, cool.
Super cool. But again, 78 pounds. Like,
it's a lot.
My hair doesn't weigh anywhere near 3 pounds.
I was gonna say, I thought you were
gonna
say it doesn't weigh 78 pounds. I'm
yeah,
like, no, it does not.
No, not at all. But it's pretty long, you know. Like, when I go in for a haircut, I can definitely tell, like, they've taken off 3 inches. Like, oh my gosh. But yeah, 78 pounds. I thought that was kind of crazy.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah,
all right,
for
well,
sure.
I think we have covered quite a few different topics, from crocodiles to sheep to cats eating strings and dogs eating Kong toys that they shouldn't. So
yeah. All right, guys, check in next week as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People Pets and Vets. Make sure to follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. Please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.